From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're with Len Vidopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, planet Earth, wherever you are in the world. You're most welcome to the Len Vidopic Show here at today's News Talk TNT, where we find the facts, kill the spin, and tell it like it is about the stories making the headlines around the world. On the show today, we have some remarkable, excellent, outstanding guests, including, in a short while, Charlie Downs, a spokesperson for Generation Z, whatever that is. What do they do once we got to the end of the alphabet? Do we go back to A, or is it A plus? We'll find out. I'll ask him that question. He'll be sharing his perspective on what looks like quite a dramatic change in the upstart new kid on the block political party in the UK called Reform, which seems to be making rather substantial inroads into the poll ratings of the other old legacy parties. What's all that about? Can Charlie show us the maturity he wants to see from his party to make a significant impact at the forthcoming general election? We'll ask him all those questions in as unpatronizing a way as I can. Then we will be also talking to a representative from the Workers of England Union, another union speaking up for workers in this country. And what's that all about? Aren't there enough unions already? What does a trade union do that you can't do for yourself? I'll tell you now, are they doing it a secret? I particularly love their narrative. They do seem to be very and genuinely committed to the people that they represent. But I'll leave it for Stephen Morris from the union to explain what they've been up to this weekend, because they've had a conference. I suspect it's all part of the pushback against the old legacy establishments, which have been progressively or regressively drawing the country down. Other guests as well, including the very own Net Zero Watch representative, Harry Wilkinson, who will give his take on the continuing decline and fall of the climate emergency that never happened. It's raining just like it always does in Britain today and every day, I'd suggest. And also, it seems that the political authorities are backing off at great speed now from their previous heady commitments, multi-billion, if you look at the world, multi-trillion dollar and pound commitments to ruining our lives to try and stop a fake climate emergency that never happened. So Harry will give us the latest on that. He actually sent me an email on a different subject during the week, but it's all connected to getting common sense back into politics. And then I went to a premiere last night in central London. Not too keen on going into London these days, but it was worth it. Naeem Mahmood was showing a film called No Budget, No Script, No Permission, which is about the making of another film called Gods of Our Own Religion. It was quite an avant-garde, almost film noir version of the kind of thing that was coming out of French cinema in the late 50s and early 60s. I was stunned and also jealous as a film director myself. He threw away the rule book. Sometimes people do that because they've got the money and it doesn't work. He threw it away because he didn't have any money, but he made it work. We'll be talking to Mr. Mahmood, about two things. First of all, how he made the film, and secondly, why he made the film at the middle of lockdown in the UK. All kinds of things to discuss with him, including the moral question of whether he should have been out and about with 50 extras in a deserted city, something like 28 days later, if you've seen that film. All of that with me between now and 2 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So 4 hours of Len Vidopic today. You can have your say as well. Go to tntradio.live. Join the chat. I don't always get to speak about everything you go down there because you end up talking about things like eBay and stuff I haven't even mentioned on the show. That's absolutely fine. Whatever you want to talk about, go to the TNT Radio chat and have your say. And I'll try and read out the ones which are relevant or just plain amusing. Holly, I'm expecting great things from you and also from Just a Bloke. We've got regulars, but why not become one? Go to tntradio.live and have your say. Also, there are phone numbers there. And we squeeze in as many phone calls as we can as well. Whether you agree, disagree, just please don't swear. That's the only thing. There are children watching and listening somewhere in the world. It's just my request. It's not technically illegal. I just think it's nice for parents if they can let their children listen too. Everyone has the right to be edified. Everyone has the right to hear the facts. You'll also hear my opinions, but they're separated from the facts. I don't shove my propaganda down your neck. And the same goes for my guests as well. So if you're strapped in with your cup of tea, if you're ready with whatever you're doing, listen to me for the next 4 hours and hopefully it'll brighten up your day. All of that on the Lemon Topic Show right here on TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Joining me now is Charlie Downs, spokesperson for A Generation. I was the future once, Charlie. Charlie, hello.
Hi.
Wake up.
How's it going? Hey.
you young people, I suppose you're still in your PJs.
Yeah, does it look like
I've been
it?
Up since six.
Oh, well,
when I
well
said
done,
when I said Charlie, who did you think I was talking to?
I assumed it was probably, I don't know, someone behind the camera or something like that.
You know. Probably, yeah, that's right. My cast of thousands here in the studio. It was you, Charlie Downs. They're all here to give you the very best look, the best chance to share your views on behalf of the billions of people of your generation. Have you been?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, very well. I mean, depressed at the state and direction of our country, but hey, that's, you know, that's Sunday.
Before we, well, every day, I think. I mean, it's bad the other 6 days too. Maybe you just get more chance to think about it on a Sunday. Mm. Let me ask you to just explain for those who may have not heard about you before, what do you do? What's your interest in politics and why at such a young age?
So my name's Charlie Downs. I'm a political consultant and freelance commentator. I've been interested in politics for a long time, since my sort of mid-teens thereabouts, and consistently disappointed by the system that we have in this country, the types of characters that it throws up, the excuses that we have for leaders, and just the generally depressing direction that our country is heading in. Now, something I've been thinking about a lot recently and talking about is the fact that the Britain of today, modern Britain, multicultural Britain, global Britain, that is the only Britain that me and my generation have ever known. I was born in the year 2001, so 4 years after the entry of Tony Blair into Downing Street, that fateful day. And this Britain is not like the Britain of old. This is an entirely new post-revolution country that we grew up in. You know, the Britain of old, the kind of quaint, settled, ancient, storied homeland that we see in pictures and videos and in stories from our grandparents and parents, that's a myth to us. That's not something that was ever real. You know, we live in this kind of flattened, kitschy, fake Britain that has existed for the last 30 years. And I look at what was taken from me and from my generation. I look at the world that existed before globalization and before New Labour and before Blairism. And I feel that something has truly been, you know, truly been lost. That's the kind of world that I would want to raise a family in, but it doesn't exist anymore. You know, what we have today is this kind of year zero post-revolution new country that wears the clothes of Britain, but is actually in fact something quite different to the traditional nation that once was here. And so I feel that it's very important to highlight the fact that there are people of my generation who are aware of this fact, because so many of us were not even taught our own history. You know, the education system that I went through, looking back on it, was so poor when it came to in sort of introducing us to our culture and traditions. As a conservative philosopher called Michael Oakeshott, who his opinions on education is very much that it's not just a series of you know, it's not just information, it's not just data, it's not just cramming your head full of disconnected abstract thoughts. It's actually an induction into a culture and into a tradition. And that, I think, has been completely lost in this country, because the education system is entirely technical. It's entirely designed to outfit you with the job, with the skills that you need to get a kind of job in the kind of managerial system that we live in, where it's all technical knowledge and no practical knowledge. It's all abstract and not physical. And so I look at that and I think it's really sad, actually, what's been done to my generation, because we haven't been educated on our own history. You know, at best, we will have been taught that World War II was the most significant thing to have happened in this country's history. We might know a little bit about the Tudors. We might have heard that there was a great fire in London at one point or another. But in general, it's just a series of disconnected stories, and it's not an actual understanding of what this country is, what it means, what it represents. And that is a truly special and unique place that, you know, nowhere else like this exists on earth. And I think it's about time that more people were talking about this, because for too long, my generation has been silent on this fact. And I think more and more of us are waking up to the fact that actually we have been deprived of something. We have been deprived of our birthright as British people, as Englishmen, Scotsmen, Irishmen, and Welshmen. And it's very sad because what existed here before was beautiful and it's been lost. And so it's about time somebody did something to try and get it back.
I feel three thoughts on what you said. First of all, like a therapist. secondly, if you've done all this after breakfast, what would you have been like if your blood sugar level was funny? Thirdly, and the more serious point, as you were talking, I think you're in your mid-20s, early 20s, that would have put me in the late 80s. I actually felt that way about the 60s. And I haven't formed this thought in great depth. It's just what I'm feeling at the minute. And I thought if I'd been born in the 40s after the war, that would have been great because then I would have lived through the technological white heat of the 1960s, first flight of Concorde, first man walking on the moon. I do remember those things, but I was very young at the time. Is it possible? This isn't a political point. This is a psychological one. We'll go into the politics later. Is it possible that many of us feel this way because we crave the certainty of history, and whether we admit to being brave and gung-ho or not, we fear the uncertainty of the future?
I think it's very tempting for all generations to look back on a previous age as being this kind of, this utopian kind of situation. Because I'm sure, you know, as you said, as much as I might look back at previous ages with a kind of longing, there were people in those very ages looking back on previous ages from themselves with that same feeling of longing. I think it's a perennial thing, this kind of feeling. With that being said, I don't think that that makes it invalid, because I think that nobody who is being honest and serious can deny that this country is getting worse and has been getting worse for a very long time at this point.
Right.
I mean, you look back at the Britain of old. Sorry, London, go on.
No, go on. I'll make my point in a moment. Go ahead, sorry.
The Britain of old was somewhere magical. You know, it was somewhere that foreigners looked at and thought of as a fairy tale land. I mean, we had kings, castles, princesses, knights, you know, and so on. It was somewhere that was like it was out of a storybook or something like that, out of myth. And now what we have is this kind of very flat, very dull, very unenergized, uninspiring, passionless, grey land, ruled, so-called, by managers like Rishi Sunak, who treat the running of the country as an exercise in administration instead of leadership. You know, we haven't had proper leaders in this country for generations, because we are essentially, as far as I'm concerned, we have been vassalized since World War II. We are essentially a colony of the kind of global empire that emerged out of the ashes of World War II, headed by America, of course. And since then, I think our culture has slowly deteriorated. I say slowly, it seems to be accelerating by the day at this point. But that's kind of the situation we find ourselves in. And, none of our leaders seem prepared to actually do anything about it. The best they offer us is a kind of managed decline. And that's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot, but it's because it's true. It's because if you look at what's happening to our country, even in the last 5 years, it's amazing how much damage has been done.
Two thoughts. One is, there was a book, and I've never forgotten this tiny little detail, in the late 1970s, and there was a picture, it was a geography book about weather, and there's this beautiful car, it was a milk van, going down a hill into this fog-covered town, and it said radiation fog over Hitchin. Radiation, nothing to do with nuclear things. It's just a kind of fog that you get in the mornings. And I remember thinking, that's the perfect picture of England. And I've always yearned to go to Hitchin. I once went there, and it was really disappointing because there's no fog, and it didn't look like that at all. But I yearned for this lost past, which I associate also with the happy times when I was a child. And it could be that nostalgia is something that affects not everybody. Some people hated their past, but there is a certainty to it. And I'll just tell you myself, growing up as I did, I was born in 1965, but if I'd been born about 1945, I think I would have had a more innocent and happier time, because the 60s and 70s were maybe more optimistic. But then I come to the second point, Charlie. When you talked about kings and queens and princesses and a happy time, we also had dysentery, whooping cough, the Black Plague, serfdom, two world wars, a life expectancy of 45, the hopeless inability of people to change class. You didn't have to tell me about any of that. the Cuban Missile Crisis from 1962, when people thought they were going to be incinerated in a nuclear war. Why not describe those things? The Dust Bowl in America of the 1930s, which the environmental catastrophes weren't mentioned, but a time of massive drought and starvation in America, or close to starvation in America. You're not mentioning the bad stuff, because with nostalgia, we airbrush out the bad stuff.
Now, this is a really crucial point that you've hit on here, actually, is the fact that material conditions in the past were absolutely worse. You know, my generation, we were born into the time of the greatest ever possible, imaginable material comfort. Yet the spiritual side is completely lacking. You know, we live in spiritually the most deadening and rotten time imaginable, you know, and indeed in previous eras, sure, there might have been disease and there might have been, you know, very uncomfortable conditions to live in. But at the very least, these were people who had a sense of themselves. They knew who they were as a people. They felt as though they were part of a group of their own, right? And that is, I think, in many ways more important than material comfort, because without without that kind of spiritual belonging, material comfort doesn't mean anything. And I think my generation is an absolute testament to that fact, because of the fact that we have some of the, you know, record levels of suicide, self-harm, depression, anxiety. Why do you think that is? That doesn't just come out of nowhere, those things.
I think
they come as a result of being an atomized generation who do not feel that they belong where they are. They feel like they could just be anywhere. You know, they don't really have any real sense of identity, because for all the talk of identity and identity politics, I don't think it's any surprise that those things have come with such force in the last few years, because we're a generation of people who are not connected to anything meaningful. At the very best, we have our phones and we have our creature comforts, but actually that's far from enough to fill the gaping hole in our souls.
Maybe we should call you not Generation Z, but Generation Y. Hold that thought. I want to come back to that. And also the comments that are coming in thick and fast, by the way, on tntradio.live. Madrid, if you want to watch it, go to tntradio.live and you'll find us there live. I've just checked. So you'll be able to watch us there. That goes for everybody. We're with Charlie Downs. We're talking about something quite heavy. I'm going to carry on for a few minutes on this after the break. I'd love to hear your views. Are you a pessimist, an optimist? Do you look back at the past nostalgically? Was the future better? You let me know at tntradio.live. You're listening to the Len Bitopic Show here on TNT. See you in a minute.
TNT's James Freeman.
Now that I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, I see the budget in a very different light. I find the discussions and leaks in the press in the weeks running up to the budget totally patronising. You know, will he, won't he give us some tax cuts? When the reality is that nothing in the budget will make any material difference to anyone, pretty much. That's usually the story. It is a game of musical chairs where the government giveth with one hand and taketh with the other, and we're all reminded about how little money that we've got left in our pockets.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're travelling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back to the Len Bitopic Show here on TNT. Big thank you for you joining. And also, by the way, thank you to my team. Whether they're Muslims, Christians, or Jews, they worship the altar of broadcasting on a Sunday. for your delectation. There is some spiritual benefit to this, I hope, and we've been having a semi-spiritual conversation with Charlie Downs, who's with me now. I'll go back to him in a minute. Lots of very interesting calls and comments coming in. Let me read some of them. First of all, Madrid, just go to the tntradio.live website, and then you will find that we are on air, and you'll be able to see me talking there. I'm looking down briefly now. That is indeed me. Do I really blink that hard? A few comments coming in now. Just a bloke says, good morning, Lambert and fellow chatterboxers. Miserable weather, but good to be with you. I like it when it rains. I like it when it rains. There's something reassuring about the fact I don't feel any obligation to go for a walk today because it's too wet. I will go for a swim later. My body is my temple. Don't laugh, Charlie, please. Madrid says, when I started work back in the day, you had to subscribe to the union. Well, we're going to be talking about to the workers of the England Union, a group I'm particularly impressed with, actually. But it's not for me to express my opinion. Let them talk with you. Whether you're in the UK or somewhere else, that union is particularly interesting because of the philosophy, the credo that they have towards politics and also towards their members. So you won't be put off at all. It's fascinating what Mr. Morris has to share. I've spoken with him before. Mazzy is so worried about what Mazzy put on the system that... Mazzy's deleted the message. Now I want to know it even more. Holly says, morning, slow to start. Good morning, Holly says. Slow start today. Not the show. Hope you mean you, Holly. Go on. Go on. Justify that comment. How very dare you? Seb says, didn't it used to be Lembertopic then? But yeah, that is my line, Seb. Yeah, thanks a lot. Good to have you on the show today. I'll be interested to know what you think about Harry Wilkinson's scientific observations today. You're always good value on the science, Seb. Buenos dias says, comments from Madrid already. And so it goes on. Lots of comments and questions. I'm particularly interested to know what you think about what you're hearing from Charlie. We've still got the cauliflower cheese and broccoli story going on there as well. Don't worry, Charlie, some of that will make no sense to you, but we do have these side conversations here. Okay, I'll read this one. Wee Fat Shug says, your body is your temple, Embit. Was it 3D trap for a 5D entity? Very good. Very good. We can talk about quantum mechanics and multidimensional universes on another occasion. And Holly's agreeing it's tipping it down. At least you got far enough to pull the curtains back where you are, Holly. Don't listen to me in the dark. Charlie, I could talk to them all day, but I'd rather talk to you. Thanks for your philosophical insight at the beginning. Before we start talking about the politics, you got me thinking, Charlie, this nostalgia point, I think it's a form of self-defense because we've banked the past and we fear the future. I just think that we do that. Not everybody. But I know that I look back nostalgically at some of the years that weren't so good for me even. Is it possible that we have to feel that way? So we're never going to be satisfied as we get older with the present because we've lived the past and survived it by definition.
I think nostalgia is a really interesting emotion, isn't it? Because it's not a positive feeling. I've thought this before. It's not actually it's a kind of sadness, is, you know, nostalgia. But I think, again, it's something that's kind of perennial. I think there's a certain type of person who feels it very strongly. And then I think there are people who don't really feel it at all. I think it depends on the depth of sentimental attachment that you have to times, places, people, things. And I think that some people find themselves, I'd include myself in this category, find themselves getting very deeply attached to those sorts of things. And I think that leads to a kind of melancholy when those things are lost, even if you never actually had those things in the first place. I mean, I was talking about the Britain that I never actually lived in, but which I see in pictures and films and in stories and, you know, from my parents and grandparents. That Britain, I have a nostalgic feeling for it, despite the fact that I never actually lived there. And that's because I look at that world, and I think that that is where I belong. Not in this one, and yet here I find myself. So there you are.
Well, two bits of information, and this could be a shock to you, Charlie, and I don't want to sound patronizing, like I said before, but Mary Poppins isn't real. Dick Van Dyke wasn't from England. And also Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, some cars can fly, but that was a made up one too. And what about the child catcher? That's from those days. And the Brothers Grimm. Lots of dark things as well. Anyway, we probably can't get any further on this one, Charlie. And I think you feel I'm being a bit facetious now. I can see it on your face, Charlie. Stop looking at me like that. Let's go on to the politics then. The nostalgia subject is interesting, and I'll probably come back to that on some other occasion as well. Maybe we'll meet up and have a chat about that. Let's work on the assumption that things have got worse then, Charlie. Let's look at the politics of the situation. And here I agree. To save time, my opinion is that we've never been so badly served by the British political elite as we have today. My thinking about that is because we have a political class that's never done anything else. Anne Widdecombe, a former Conservative government minister who was on today's news talk with me yesterday, says it's because we have identity politics and that getting into Parliament is no longer a meritocracy. It's about who you are, not how good you are. Two questions for you, Charlie. Do you think that our political system is better, worse, or the same than before? And secondly, give reasons for your answer.
Okay, since we've got quite a bit of time here, I think we can really drill into this. So let's start with some facts. So first of all, every society in every time and place, in all situations, has a ruling class and a ruled class. It's always the case. It's a perennial truth about human societies that there is a minority that sits at the top of society, an organized minority that sits above the disorganized mass of society. And that ruling class inevitably directs the culture, because culture is not something that emerges from the bottom up. It's kind of tempting and almost idealistic to imagine that it is, but it's actually something that flows downstream of power. Power directs culture. Law directs culture, not the other way around. I think it's a kind of liberal myth that power is something that can emerge from the bottom up and culture is something that is changed at the grassroots level. But I don't think it is. I mean, I think it's kind of observable, actually, that that's not the case. So if it is always the case that there is a ruling class and a ruled class, and that ruling class is always an organized minority, and the ruled class is always a disorganized mass, then the crucial question is, well, who makes up each of those classes? And the ruling class should, in any sane society, be made up of the most wise, prudent, and essentially aristocratic members of that society. And I'm not talking about aristocratic in the sort of, in the sense that you might imagine a kind of top hat wearing, long coat wearing old school English aristocrat. I'm talking about a spiritual aristocrat. I realize I keep using that word, so I'll explain what I mean by that. Somebody who is in touch with something higher, right? Because our leaders now are not in any way. As I said before, they are essentially middle managers who would be better suited working at the NatWest branch down the road, not governing the country, because they treat the governing of the country as an exercise in, you know, managing spreadsheets. They treat the country as if it's just data to be moved around instead of a homeland for the people who live here and for the people who are from here. And so if it's the case that there is always a ruling class and a ruled class, that is the point. The ruling class should be wise and prudent, and ours are not. So I agree with you that we have never been more poorly served by our ruling class in this country. You know, it's actually embarrassing, to be honest. And I think that many, pretty much all of Europe, are feeling that way. America, I think, are certainly feeling that way. And it's bleak. And the question ultimately is, how do we fix this situation? How do we, how can we bring about a circulation of the elites? Because it's not a case of getting rid of elites as a concept. It's a case of having elites in place who have the best interests of the nation at heart. And at the moment, okay, they don't. And you can see this.
Right. I want to get to some specific examples from the week. But first of all, I'm just looking up the definition of aristocracy: government by the best individuals or by a small privileged class. First half, yeah, okay. Second half, interesting. Goes on some other definitions, but this is a particularly interesting one. A governing body or upper class, usually made up of a hereditary nobility. Now, this is all from the Merriam-Webster dictionary. The point, Charlie, is that to me, aristocracy means that you inherit power. You're born into it. It's given to you not through merit, but through historical opportunity. That doesn't seem to me necessarily to be in line with the democratic system. But you could be right, because the people who are wrecking the country have created their own political aristocracy. They haven't done other things like I have and like you do. They've just been politicians. And so I would regard the word aristocracy in that sense as the cause of our problems, not the solution to it, because they haven't done anything else. They're just aristocrats. They try to rule us when they should be serving us. And an aristocrat won't do that because they think they're above us.
Do you know, in the Bible, the sort of metaphor of the shepherd is used a lot. You know, Christ as the shepherd of the, you know, the sheep, which are his followers. I think there's actually real depth to that metaphor. And I think it's actually a commentary on the human condition in a very deep way. And that is that leaders, the role of leaders is not to, ultimately, it's not to listen to the consensus. It is to recognize that they are positioned as leaders for a reason, and it's their job to shepherd the people. Now, the leaders that we have right now should not be in those roles because they're not well suited to them. But there is a world where the leaders are worthy kind of shepherds of the sheep, ultimately sheep-like populace. Because I think if you don't think that people behave in that way, then you weren't paying attention during COVID, right? You have to understand how people, you know, humans are a herd animal, and that's a survival instinct. I think it's entirely reasonable that humans behave in that way, because all animals behave in that way. You know, it's not surprising that we are this way. But, you know, I think it's just about being honest about these things, because, you know, as much as you might say hereditary power is wrong and, you know, the democratic way of doing things is better, you know, look at what the democratic way of doing things has brought us. It's brought us to this situation. And when people come, you know, for example, with monarchy, when people attack monarchy because, well, they didn't earn their position there, it's like, would you want that? Would you want to be born into that with that kind of responsibility on your shoulders? Well, I don't think you would. Yeah, I think most people
I've often said that despite the apparent opulence and poshness of being a royal member of the royal family, you're essentially a prisoner too, but that's for another time. Animals don't watch reality television, very rarely declare mass war on each other, though you could say the ant kingdom does that to an extent. They don't run each other down with accusations of racism, and they don't try to take other people's right, other animals' rights away on the basis of what they think and say. So I'm not sure I agree with the animal kingdom analogy. My worry is, particularly during this week, that we've seen the creep forward of totalitarianism, and that more than I've seen for a long time, certainly in British politics, in the last 7 days, we've seen the aristocracy, in the political elite or aristocracy, throwing mud at each other. Hold that thought for a minute, because I want to get Siv in for a moment, Charlie. Siv, good evening to you. How are you?
Not bad, Lemon. Look, I just want to go back to something your guest was saying a bit earlier about nostalgia. Is it necessarily negative? To me, I don't think it is, in the sense that the times I had in my past or in my youth, I felt were good days. I'm not necessarily pining for them. I think when you pine for them, that's when it becomes sad. But when you can just look back and go, yes, that was fun, yes, they were great, but I don't know that I necessarily want to go back there, then I think it can be a good thing to look back and to escape for a while from some of today's challenges. Doesn't mean you avoid them, just means you have a break from them. What do you say?
I'll give you my view. I'll ask Charlie in a minute. My view is that a lot of times people say, well, I wish I was back in that relationship or this relationship, or, oh, yeah, I miss those people. And oftentimes it's about the people that they miss, or relationships that they remember at their apex, their halcyon time, but they don't remember the fact that they also broke their leg or had dysentery on holiday or didn't have enough money to live on anything other than lentils. And so I think I do, as I said, use my phrase before, we airbrush out the sad times, and by definition, nostalgia is better, which is why people end up saying, oh, the future isn't like it used to be. Charlie, what do you think of Siv's question?
Again, I think this is a very deep topic that probably merits a lot longer and more extensive discussion. I do still feel that nostalgia is ultimately a negative thing, because it is, I think by definition, nostalgia is a kind of longing, a longing for something that is lost. And, you know, I think that can only be a negative thing, really.
Siv?
But if you've lost it, though, right, But you're looking back on it, you're going, that was fun. Okay, but here we are in today's world. Is that necessarily a bad thing? Or are you saying that we pine for the past and we go, I'd like to be back there. Please take me back there.
Darling?
I mean, yeah, I think that it's probably the latter. I think maybe I'm wrong saying this, but I think the British in particular are deeply nostalgic people, because if you go back 1,000 years, if you take it right back to like King Alfred, for example, you can read in his writings his own nostalgia for a time lost. You know, it was actually, obviously he was, his life mission was driving the Vikings out of Britain, that noble, very noble cause, deeply, deeply relevant story for today, I think, the story of King Alfred. But you read in his writings this deep longing for the England that was, you know, the England of before. And, you know, it is a melancholy thing. I don't think it always necessarily has to be melancholy, but I think generally speaking, when you're reminiscing in that kind of way about something that you love that you don't have anymore, I think it's kind of always a kind of negative feeling, no?
But I'll say this to both of you. We have to go to... Go on, Siv.
No, I was just going to say briefly, Len, but I'll go in a minute. I suppose that's my point, that it doesn't always have to be melancholy. I get why it can be, and I get why it is, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. I mean, when I think about those times in my youth, yeah, I do kind of airbrush the bad old days, like, you know, I might have grazed my knee, or I might have whatever it was, you know, caught diarrhea at that overseas trip or whatever it was, but... You know, you still think about those times, and you can smile back, and you go, "Well, that was fun." But then you can get yourself out of that. At least I try to, and then go, "Right, now it's time to move forward. How do we deal with the problems of today?" And I think you've got to have a healthier attitude to it. That's my view on it. Good to talk to you, Lambert.
Steve, always a pleasure to speak with you. Have a good evening. Let me add just one thought before we go to the break. My brother and I met in October 2005. He was traveling through Wales, where I was a member of parliament, and we spent the day down at the local pub. We weren't drinking particularly. It was just a nice October, last of the summer wine type day. We played pool as a team. Nobody beat us that day. I gave him a great hug before he left. The next month, he was dead. He died unexpectedly. I've always looked at that day as a perfect day. And I don't look back on it with melancholy. It was a perfect day. And a little bit like what Siv said there, I banked that. And I left my brother to whatever happens when we die with no regrets. Last word to you before we go to the break, Charlie. Then we won't come back to nostalgia.
Yeah, I mean, wow. What a way to end it, Lambert. That's very, very, very heavy. But yeah, maybe nostalgia isn't always a negative thing. I don't know. I suppose in my experience it has been, but maybe that's because I'm a melancholy person. I don't think I am. I think I'm a very positive person, but I have my days, and I think today is one of those days.
I think that nostalgia sometimes is because we want to hoard our lives. We want to have all the best bits, and we forget that, to quote Led Zeppelin, a great pop band from the 70s, a little rain must fall on all from time to time. This is the mystery of the quotient. Let's come back and talk about contemporary politics and leave our nostalgia here now. You're listening to the Lempotopic Show. It might be called Philosophy Hour today with Charlie Downs. I hope you're finding this interesting, though. It's nice to be able to take these excursions in our thinking. When we come back, I want to ask Charlie about a party I know he's attracted to, the Reform UK Party, which apparently has had some pretty big news over the last 24 hours. All of that with me, Lembotopic, on TNT. See you in a minute.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go.
I
didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
One in four Australian women experience domestic violence in their lifetime. Staying is dangerous, but leaving can mean homelessness for them and their children. With your generosity, the Salvos can provide crisis services and ongoing support, helping women find a way out of violence and a way back into a safe and stable life. Help us leave no one in need. Please donate to the Red Shield Appeal today.
Lembit Opik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. We're going to talk about contemporary politics and some developing stories with regard to a party that Charlie Downs, my guest at the moment, is involved in or interested in being involved in. Just before we go there, just some comments. These are rhetorical, Charlie. I've got to move away from nostalgia. It's fascinating, but we need to talk about politics today as well. So just FYI, for your information, We've Had Chuck says, this is about the ruling class. They keep us divided. It's the one major lesson they learned over the centuries. Never allow organic anti-establishment movement and always control or divert narratives. Thanks for that. The event I went to where I saw Naeem, the film director, who's on the show today as my fourth guest, he's really pushing back on that. You'll love what he has to say in a couple of hours' time. Holly says, but Charlie, you're basing societal position on money. We need to change our gods. Madrid simply says ruling class ... Holly goes further, inbred parasites. Wee Fat Shark says they refer to us as the herd. They're not like us or the same as us. They don't want you to know. That's why they always punt the notion of for the people. Yes, I heard that phrase so many times when I was in politics. Just two more. Holly says I'm a free spirit and will not follow the herd. Thank you. That is the best feeling. And just a bloke has this wonderful African proverb. The sheep spends its life fearing the wolf, only to be eaten by the shepherd. How very interesting. I'm going to take that off you. I'm going to use that. Sounds like a good name for a series. Charlie, we've certainly got things going with nostalgia, but let's go to the present. It seems that in a developing story in Britain, Reform UK, which is the fastest growing party in terms of popularity in the United Kingdom, has now developed something of a double-headed monster as its leadership. There's a man called Richard Tice as the official leader. But then there's been a very large character called Nigel Farage, who's attributed as being the progenitor of the successful Brexit campaign that took the UK out of the European Union. Tell us what you know about what's going on in Reform UK.
Well, there's a number of things going on. So the developing story is that Nigel Farage is appearing to be coming back as a kind of major player in Reform. Now, he's the honorary chairman at the moment, but he is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's a media personality right now. He has his show on GB News and, you know, that's kind of
which
his
isn't
thing.
As good as TNT, by the way, the whole time, which isn't
quite
as
right,
good as
yes.
TNT. Don't look yes. it up. Just stay with today's news talk. Thanks for that, Charlie. We might
he's,
have you back.
Yes. My apologies. He's a celebrity, first and foremost, at this point. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens if he does come back to Reform. For example, replacing Richard Tice as the leader. Now, I think if Reform want to get anywhere, I think they need to get rid of Tice, personally. So I worked for Reform for a very brief period when I was actually at university. And honestly, I was deeply unimpressed by their internal operation. I don't think they're a serious force. And I thought it was interesting, actually, what one of your commenters said just now about diverting away, elites diverting away using narratives and so on. And that is my concern when it comes to Reform, is that they are essentially an exercise in containment. You know, you look at what they actually stand for. For example, on immigration, which I think is the single most pressing issue of our time in this country, what they want is net zero immigration. And what that means in practice is a one in, one out system. Now, what people don't know is we have a emigration of 400,000 a year. An outflow of 400,000 a year. So what Reform are actually saying when they say they want net zero immigration is that they would be happy with 400,000 people coming in every year, which is, you know, functionally no different to the conservative policy that we've had for the last 13 years, where it is just hundreds of thousands of people coming in from wherever, regardless of their you know, attachment to this culture, desire to integrate or anything else. That's my concern when it comes to reform. I am worried that they are going to, by presenting themselves as a alternative, as the dissident party, they are going to contain the dissident energy that is brewing in this country, because it is brewing, let me tell you that. I've been working with an independent candidate for mayor of London recently, and we've been talking to thousands of people across London.
What's his name?
And his name is Andreas Mickley. He's a gym owner from North London and just amazing. We've been speaking to thousands of people, and the level of rage, the level of dissatisfaction and disenfranchisement in this country is absolutely palpable. You speak to people and they, I mean, most of them aren't even going to bother voting because, I mean, who is there to vote for? Especially in London, you've got Sadiq Khan for the for Labour, who is awful, and you've got Susan Hall for the Tories, who is also awful. I mean, what are you supposed to do? So the crucial mission of people who are dissidents, truly, in the real sense, in this country right now, is to harness that energy, to activate that constituency who do feel completely disaffected, and basically get them out the door. Now that's a mammoth task in and of itself. I think reform might do it. I think reform do have the ability to do it. But again, I'm concerned that they are not the right guys for the job. I'm concerned that they are just going to contain that energy and not actually make any meaningful change.
You surprised me. And here's why. I would have put you down as a conservative. Certainly 10, 15 years ago, I would have imagined you'd be in the mainstream Conservative Party. Now, I would have assumed that you would be quite sympathetic to reform because they are quite lively. They're quite independent-minded. And they're challenging things that I know from having spoken to you here on today's News Talk in the past, you agree with. That there is no climate emergency, that we don't want to have thought control, that extremism in politics is dressed up as an intolerance of extremism. They say all of those things. And also Nigel Farage is something of a man of the people. I guess you must have met him. I have. And he's very accessible. But you're dissatisfied with what looks like the most viable alternative, at least at the ballot box, if you don't like Conservative and Labour.
Now, speaking pragmatically, of course, I recognise that the utility of reform is to basically destroy the Conservative Party, because the Conservative Party have been the architects of this country's destruction. Because as much as you might blame, as much as I have already in this broadcast blamed New Labour and Tony Blair for some of the damage that's been done to this country, it's actually been accelerated under the Conservatives. For example, when it comes to immigration, I mean, Blair was bringing in 200,000 or thereabouts at peak. But the Conservatives, I mean, millions, literally millions. And that's just madness. It's a form of insanity. If it was done on purpose, then it would be, you know, it would be absolutely criminal. You know, whether that is the case or not, who knows? But yeah, in any sane world, I would be a Conservative, right? But this is the point. Back to my generation and, you know, our concerns. What is left to conserve? I mean, what of worth is left to conserve, honestly? Like, what's the point of being conservative if all you do, if all you're concerned about conserving is the GDP, if all you're concerned about is mere economics, what Thomas Carlyle called the dismal science of economics.
I studied economics, steady on there, but I left it because I agreed. I actually ended up studying philosophy because I thought that economics was a pseudoscience, not a social science. And moreover, and this is my opinion, when I was a member of parliament, I came to the conclusion that parties don't run economies, they wreck economies. And when they take the hands off the economic levers, then things recover. That's what I came to the view of. So I actually have to agree with Carlyle and with you about the dismal way in which they try to conduct that pseudoscience. Let me read some comments to you now about the possibility of Nigel Farage making a shift. Holly says, Farage only works for one thing, and that's Farage. That's something you hear quite a lot about Nigel. I'll ask for you to answer all of these in one go. So let me just go through them all. She adds, I think reform haven't thought it through properly and have rather questionable funding. Just a bloke points out Farage is actually president of Reform UK. It's pretty much the same as chairman, I think. And Robert Hancock says, Farage got out of a hellhole you should have never entered. And then two more. Holly adds, Holly's on a roll here. You must vote and write, I do not consent. That is if there isn't a good independent candidate. And Lisa has spotted my comment from before. It's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Lisa, you're right. And you know the meaning of that song as well. That's in relation to what I said about my brother. I'm really impressed that you got that reference. I wouldn't have gone back to it if you hadn't. Lots of people therefore saying Lisa accepted, because she was making a very personal comment then, a very touching one. Lots of people saying that Farah is a big character, but he's in it for himself. How would you respond to that?
I don't know about in it for himself. I mean, I think all politicians have a certain level of egotism and arrogance. And in a way, I think our system kind of selects for people like that. And I think that that's almost an inevitable thing. I think that the type of person that thinks of themselves as being worthy to tell people what to do, ultimately, you kind of have to have a certain amount of self-centeredness. Now, do I think he's just doing it for himself? I think there is an amount of that. I also think he does have some sincere beliefs. I also think that he is a guy who came out of the world of finance. And so there's a kind of financial element to it as well. But ultimately, I mean, is he a force for good or is he a force for bad? Again, thinking pragmatically, I think that he's probably in this country the best option that we've got in terms of a dissident politician who could actually lead a movement into parliament and take over, essentially. Am I happy about that? Is he the kind of leader that I want to see? No. But then the kind of leader that I want to see is, back to Carlyle, a kind of great man of history type character, somebody that emerges once every few generations and just ignites the crowd and ignites the people, ignites the spirit of the people. Are we anywhere close to having a kind of figure like that in Britain? I don't think so, unfortunately. I think that we're still a ways off that. I think, frankly, things have to get way worse before a person like that finally emerges. But, you know, history is the biography of great men. And ultimately, it's only a matter of time before one does emerge. And in the meantime, is Farage a good option? I mean, sure, why not?
Hemingway says, I don't think that Richard Tice can honestly believe that people take him seriously. Hemingway, I think he's done quite well. This is my opinion. I think he's done quite well in the last week. I think he handled the defection quite well. I'm saying that to a Reform UK person, actually, yesterday. James adds this really interesting point. Good morning, James. Not one political party ever asks the question, how can the whole planet be trillions in debt? Who are we in debt to? Who owns the planet? What are their names? How do they get control of a whole planet? How do we stop this so we have a financial system that benefits us all? Not one party ever mentions this. Why? James, I know a new organization I'm involved in, actually. It's a digital nation, which has as one of its principles that it won't have a national debt. But I won't go into that now. I'll just leave that as a rhetorical point. Lisa, I can't stop seeing Lou Reed that either now because of your comment and my thoughts. We've only got a few minutes here. And I know he's devoted a lot of time to nostalgia. I think it was worthwhile, an interesting Sunday morning conversation. Here's a question. If you're not happy with reform, are you going to reform, or are you going to accept that there's no perfect party for an independent-minded thinker like you?
Well, again, pragmatically speaking, they're the best we've got. So I might have to just make my peace with them. But ultimately, I think somebody like me is never going to be truly satisfied unless it's actually me in the seat. So, hey.
Are you planning to stand for Parliament?
Maybe someday, but not yet.
And one other question about the Reform Party. I know many Reform UK people listen to my show. If you were to give advice to the leadership of Reform, who could well be listening, what would that advice be now? Practical advice.
It would be harden, essentially. It would be actually nail down what your narrative is, because right now it's absolute, it's wet, it's fluid, it's not concrete, right? And that, if you want to succeed in politics, you have to have an absolute rock solid narrative that ignites people's passions, right? We like to think as humans that we are these perfectly rational and logical creatures, but actually we're not. You know, in the first instance, we are always irrational. You know, what happens underneath the mind, the kind of the instincts, the passions, that's the first part of it. And then we come up with rational explanations to justify those feelings after the fact. But actually, when you speak to most people, they've made their mind up about most things that they think, and they will come up with rational arguments for feeling that way after the fact. And so I think that Reform need to tap into that. They need to recognize that what they need to do is come up with a narrative that is far stronger than just being the Tories from 10 years ago, because people want
so why don't you go
are craving
to more. Why don't you go to Reform UK HQ and tell them this and help them do it?
Well, I might just have to, Lambert. I might just have to.
Well, if you do, we'll definitely have you back. We'll have you back anyway. Thank you so much, Charlie. That's fascinating. We got into some philosophy there. I hope viewers found that interesting, judging by the chat you did. That's Charlie Downes, a thinker, an activist, and it turns out a philosopher as well. I shall listen back to that with nostalgia, but not yet, because coming up next, we've got Stephen Morris from the Workers of England Union. That's a union that I think is particularly interesting because their narrative is fascinating and I think sincere. You make up your own mind in a few minutes and do keep your calls and comments coming. You're getting lively. We've got 3 hours to go. I'm Lembitopic. This is the Lembitopic Show on TNT. I'll see you in a few minutes.